Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio. And how the tech are ya? It is time for tech news for Tuesday, October 31st, 2023. Happy Halloween, everybody. Or a spooky Samhain, if you prefer. Last week, I mentioned we would not have a news episode today because of smart talks with IBM. But the joke was on me. Turns out there was a scheduling delay, and so now you get an episode from me after all. So let's dive into the spooky world of tech news. And you might hear me make some spooky sounds throughout the show. But I assure you, it's not that I'm haunted. It's just that the kidney stone I'm dealing with still isn't done yet. Anyway, the back half of 2023 has hit me hard, y'all. But never mind that. You're not here to hear me grouse and moan about my health. You're here to hear me grouse and moan about tech. Let's get to it. First up, this week, U.S. President Joe Biden issued an executive order that deals with the big topic in tech of 2023, that of artificial intelligence. And they had a particular focus on generative AI, which I'll just remind you, generative AI is one subset of the overall discipline of artificial intelligence. And if you're not from America, or maybe you are from America, but you've never really looked into it, and you don't know what an executive order is, it is one of the president's powers of office. The president has the authority to issue directives without having to go through Congress or, you know, any other branch of the government, as long as those directives relate to how the federal government works. So the U.S. president could issue an executive order to manage federal resources, but the president could not issue an executive order to, you know, force South Dakota to change its name to Frank or whatever, because that's not in the power of the federal government. This executive order in particular creates requirements mostly among federal agencies when it comes to entering into contracts with AI companies and AI services. So the order restricts those contracts to companies that comply with regulations. And those regulations include things like testing requirements for their AI models, transparency when it comes to developing the tools, and various restrictions on what generative AI is and is not allowed to do. So for example, if the generative AI can be convinced to design weapons, that's right out. You know, a federal agency is not allowed to enter into a contract with a company that does that. So these requirements don't hit the AI companies directly, right? They're hitting the federal agencies. But if you assume that those companies want to do business with the federal government, which is a very lucrative business to get into, it thus creates an incentive for those AI companies to comply with the rules. Now, there are some aspects to the executive order that more directly target AI companies. For example, should a company engage in training AI systems that could potentially create a threat to national security? Well, those companies are going to need to send a little heads up to the federal government first, which is not a bad idea, though I would submit that sometimes we don't realize something is a threat until, you know, it's threatened us, or worse. The order also recommends, but does not necessarily require, that generative AI companies use a label or a watermark for all AI-created material, whether that's audio, video, or images, or whatever. The order also places the onus of creating more structured regulations on various other agencies within the U.S. government. And speaking of regulations, a couple of AI luminaries have recently spoken out against regulations. Business Insider reports that Jan LeCun, one of the leading researchers in artificial intelligence, has argued that the various doomsday scenarios being bandied about regarding AI aren't really realistic. Rather, he says, spreading these stories is a tactic that's used by a few large companies that are working in AI today. And you might say, well, why would they do that? Why would they say AI is a potential threat to humanity's existence? Well, these same companies are actually taking a very active role to work with governments around the world to develop AI regulations. Not because the companies actually believe these regulations are going to prevent harm. Instead, they're trying to create regulations that will allow big established companies to be insulated against smaller startups, because the smaller startups are going to find it hard or maybe even impossible to work within the framework of regulations. So, according to LeCun, this is a way to stifle competition and innovation. Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, comes to mind when you hear about this argument, when it's put this way, because Altman has taken an active role to work with governments in the US and the UK and elsewhere in an effort to frame regulations around AI. Now, to take the other side, Altman would argue that his goal is to set up rules that make sense and that will protect people against bad AI design and bad AI implementations. But critics like LeCun say this is really more of a self-serving motivation, and it prompts Altman to work so closely with governments in an effort to suppress potential competitors and give OpenAI an unfair market advantage. He is not, by the way, the only AI bigwig to suggest that this is a thing. Andrew Ng, who founded Google Brain and who teaches at Stanford University, and in fact taught Sam Altman, has also argued that the push for regulations, particularly the push from large AI companies, suggests more of a move to squash competition and innovation than to actually create a safe environment. Now, Ng told Financial Review that he believes regulations are important. He's not saying don't have regulations at all, but he is saying that bad regulations are worse than no regulations at all. So it goes bad regulations at the bottom, no regulations, and then good regulations. If things are left to the companies that are going to be regulated, then we should expect nothing less than rules that are going to benefit them to the detriment of everyone else, whether that's a competitor or a consumer, which kind of makes sense to me. And in the war between artists and AI, a U.S. district judge named William Orrick has dismissed most of a lawsuit that three artists brought against the companies Midjourney, DeviantArt, and Stability AI. In fact, out of those three, only the part of the lawsuit directly involving Stability AI is still alive in the court system. The judge ruled that the accusations as laid out in the lawsuit were, quote, defective in numerous respects, end quote, regarding Midjourney and DeviantArt. And so those elements are now essentially dead in the water until they perhaps get reasserted in a updated filing. So at the center of this whole legal mess is a concern among artists that generative AI companies are making broad and unrestricted use of artist works without the artist's permission or compensation, and that as a result, these generative AI models are able to lift elements of artists' styles. And essentially, the AI can compete against the very artists whose work the model was used to train on in the first place. As for why Stability AI is still in the mix here, it mostly has to do with how Midjourney and DeviantArt have used Stability AI's generative tool called Stable Diffusion. And the judge says, well, the artists weren't able to really show that those companies were, you know, using this knowingly in an effort to harm artists, or were doing it in a way that where they were disregarding the harm being done to artists. And that really just falls to Stability AI, which created the tool in the first place. The artists' accusations showed that, at least according to a search tool meant to match artists against works that generative AI models have supposedly used during training, the Stability AI tool had made unauthorized use of art to train up Stable Diffusion. So out of the three artists, only one of them is still part of this lawsuit. The other two dropped out because they did not actually obtain a copyright for their works. So there was no legal protection to be violated in the first place. But one of the three did. She's still in the mix. So she said, my name has popped up in the search engine showing that this model used my work to train itself. Now, that in itself is not definitive proof, right? Just because she shows up on the search engine. But the judge ruled that it was sufficient to allow the case to continue through to the discovery phase. Now, I should add, this is not the only case brought against Stability AI and how it trains Stable Diffusion. Getty Images sued the company both in the UK and in the United States, arguing that Stability AI used stock images from Getty's enormous database to train its model, and that the company, quote, removed or altered, end quote, Getty's copyright management information in the process. Just yesterday, Stability's AI legal team asked a London judge to throw out the UK case. I've not heard how that has panned out. But also, these cases have been going on for a while. While this is an update, you know, they date back to early 2023 and even late 2022. So it's not like this just popped out of nowhere. This is an ongoing battle in legal systems around the world. Justice moves ever swiftly. Okay, we've got more stories to cover, and they don't even have to do with artificial intelligence. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'll talk about some more tech news. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. they push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
We're back, and now I'm done talking about AI, at least for the moment, which means it's time to talk about X, you know, the platform formerly known as Twitter. Only one story, though, so let's just get through it. And the big news this week is that X is going to offer restricted stock units, or RSUs, to its employees. Now, keep in mind, X is a private company at the moment. There is no publicly traded stock market that it's on, so you can't look to see what stocks are trading at right now. It's privately held. So in order to be able to issue restricted stock units to employees, first the company has to determine how much it's actually worth. And this gets a little more loosey-goosey than you would find with a publicly traded company. Like with a publicly traded company, you take the number of shares that exist in that company and you multiply that by the price per share, and you get a rough estimation of the valuation of that company. So X had to go through a different process, but in internal documents, it had listed its valuation at around $19 billion. Now, keep in mind, when Elon Musk agreed to purchase Twitter, he did so at a share price that would be set at $54.20 per share, which meant that at the time of purchase, Twitter would be worth $44 billion. So he spent $44 billion, and now the platform has a current valuation of $19 billion. That's a 56% drop in valuation over the course of a year. Now, keep in mind, that's just one assessment. Other assessments are actually different. For example, Fidelity figured that the drop is closer to 65% of value. Yelza. Now, I admit, when I first read about this, I didn't see that there was a bright side. But TechCrunch's Amanda Silberling points out that sometimes a lower valuation isn't necessarily a bad thing for the company or its employees, because the employees stand to gain those stocks or stock options, and it could mean that they could get a lot more of them as part of their compensation package. This can also become a very powerful tool to recruit new talent into the company, and as long as the company does better and starts to improve in value, employees will see a huge gain as a result of having those stocks, assuming that they execute their stock options. Obviously, X still needs to regain a lot of lost ground, right? A 56% drop in valuation is not a great thing to communicate out to the world. Doing that is going to create much greater gains for the employees who exercise their stock options, however, so it could be a really good thing. And, you know, never say never. I'm not going to say that X is just destined to be doomed. It just has to prove it can reverse the trend it's been on over the last year. Now, personally, I think that would be a whole lot easier if Elon Musk took a big old step back from the driver's seat. I mean, sure, he put in a different CEO, so technically he's not the CEO of the company anymore. But the general impression I get in the tech world is that it's really still Elon Musk calling the shots over there. And maybe that's unrealistic, maybe that's not the case, but it certainly seems to be that, at least from the outside, and I don't think that's been doing the company any favors. Another long ongoing story around the world is how various countries are beginning to treat apps and tech that is created out of countries like China. So in a recent example, the government of Canada decided yesterday to issue a ban on the messaging app WeChat on all government-issued mobile devices. The Canadian government also included a Russian app in that ban as well, or really a Russian suite, the Kaspersky antivirus program specifically. Now, this is out of a concern that the governments of China and Russia could potentially either directly or indirectly use those kinds of apps to spy on Canadian government officials and Canadian systems. The government did say that there was no evidence that any such thing had happened so far, so this would really be more of a proactive move, as the CIO for Canada has identified those two apps as having unacceptable risks associated with them. Chinese representatives condemned the move. They said, that it was really done more as a political gesture without any real justifiable foundation. And Kaspersky responded with surprise and disappointment, saying that the lack of evidence indicates that the ban is a response to a geopolitical perceived threat rather than a real one, and claims no one from Canada's government ever reached out to Kaspersky to work things out before issuing the ban. Now, I will say that at least with Kaspersky, it has a somewhat shady reputation in the cybersecurity community. Not that their tools don't work, but that there is this fear of a potential connection between Kaspersky and various Russian intelligence agencies. Kaspersky has been rather compliant with Russian government on several things that have led to people saying it may not be a good idea to use Kaspersky products in things like government settings because of the potential that someone could use that for surveillance purposes. And Canada is not the only country to have concerns about this product. The U.S. issued a similar ban back in 2017. Germany's Federal Office for Information Security issued a strong recommendation to its staff not to use Kaspersky antivirus products out of concern, you know, regarding the company's potential connections to the Russian government. So this is not an unprecedented event. Now, for those of you who like those stories where the little guy stands up to the fat cat, I got one for you. Now, in this case, the little guy is a software firm in the UK called Threads Software Limited, and the fat cat is Meta, formerly known as Facebook. And yes, this all has to do with the name Threads, which Meta has used for its microblogging service, you know, the Twitter / X killer platform that saw rapid adoption, and then, not long after that, rapid disengagement, or what I call, oh, I forgot I even installed that, itis. The software company sent a letter to Meta and said that it will go to the courts and ask for an injunction against Meta if the company doesn't stop using the name Threads. Now, to be clear, Threads Software Limited, or actually a precursor to that company called JPY Limited, applied for and received a trademark for the brand name Threads more than a decade ago. And that was well before Meta announced any intention of creating a microblogging competitor to Twitter. Now, that being said, this is not the first Threads product from Meta. Back in 2019, Meta, which at that time was still called Facebook, introduced a feature in Instagram, and it was called Threads. I'm not sure if the Threads Software Limited company actually pushed back against Meta when that happened. That's important because holding a trademark requires a company to defend that trademark. If Meta can show that Threads Software Limited did not attempt to defend its trademark when Meta first introduced the Threads product in Instagram in 2019, then that could really weaken the case against Meta. I don't know. Maybe they did push back. I couldn't find information on that when I was reading up on the story. If I had done some more digging, I probably could have, but I was running out of time. Also, there are a lot of other products out there that have the name Thread or Threads, and they have not really seen a lot of pushback from this company, from what I can tell, which is another potential strike against them. Now, all that being said, Meta supposedly did reach out to Thread Software Limited in an attempt to purchase the domain threads.app, but the company gave Meta the cold shoulder for every single request. It does, however, indicate that Meta was aware that it was going to use a brand name that was already in use. So it is a complicated thing, and who knows which way the courts will go. I mean, a lot of courts might already be, I hate to use the word biased, maybe predisposed to laying judgments against Meta, because Meta has not done itself any favors in the last, you know, decade. It has operated in a way that has almost dared governments and courts to take action against it, which could potentially spill over in decisions. We're all human beings, even judges and lawyers. So who knows? But yeah, that's what's going on in that world. In India, Apple has sent an urgent alert to several politicians in the Indian Parliament. The alert warned the recipients that their respective iPhones were potentially targeted by a state-sponsored attack. You know, like an attack with a high level of sophistication and a high requirement for, resources. So something that would typically only happen from a hacker group that had the backing of some sort of government somewhere in the world. Now, notably, all the people who have come forward so far saying that they received this alert belong to the opposition party in India's parliament. Now, Apple has not identified which state may be behind these attacks. And in fact, Apple has also said it's possible the alerts could be a false alarm. They have not issued that many alerts around the world. And they said, this could be something where we are being extra defensive, but there's no actual threat there. At least a few of the people who received the message suspect that India's conservative government is actually behind the operation, that this is an effort to maintain and extend control of the nation in general and to suppress opposition politicians. I've talked a lot about how India's government takes a really aggressive stance with tech companies when it comes to things like allowing people to use various platforms to criticize the government. So the implication that opposition leaders could be the target of the actual Indian government fits that narrative, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's true. It could be, but without evidence, you can't really draw a conclusion. Various representatives of the majority have argued that those who are contacted are overreacting, that they're jumping to conclusions that cannot be supported by evidence, and they're just reaching for reasons to be outraged at the government. So they're essentially saying, we're being unfairly targeted by these criticisms. I'm sure more will unfold, but it'll be interesting to see how Apple navigates this, because obviously it's a pretty thorny political situation. So we'll have to wait and see. Okay, I've got some more tech news items to cover before we conclude this episode, but first, let's take another quick break. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Are you ready for some football? And by that, I mean American football. And also, were you ready for it last Sunday? And if you were, did you find yourself frustrated when using YouTube in order to watch football? All right, let me back up a bit. So YouTube secured a contract to carry the NFL Sunday Ticket product that originally was with DirecTV. Now it's an add-on to the YouTube TV service. NFL Sunday Ticket gives subscribers the ability to tune into the various NFL games, the American football games of the National Football League, that are playing on any given Sunday during football season, regardless of where you happen to live. It is a very expensive add-on. It starts at $349 per year. And remember, football season doesn't go all year long. This is also on top of the YouTube TV subscription, which is more than $70 per month. So that starts to add up real quick. You sports fans have to pay a whole bunch of moolah to watch your stuff. I feel like I shouldn't complain about all the different streaming services I subscribe to at this point, because yikes. Anyway, for the first 7 weeks of this current season, YouTube's version of the NFL Sunday Ticket seemed to be working just fine. But this past Sunday, users encountered issues with lag and buffering times, and for some of the games, those issues lasted well into the second half of the game. Understandably, a lot of customers are upset. I mean, if you're paying a premium price for a service, you expect premium quality in that service. And yeah, we all understand that technical errors can happen and that systems can and do break down. That's just a fact of life. But when you're charging $350 a season just to be able to let people see games on their television or computer screen, not even go to a game, but just see it at home, there is a certain expectation that the service is going to work as advertised. YouTube posted a message indicating that the company was aware of the problem and was working on it, but as I was writing this episode, I didn't have any further details about what actually caused the problem. That might be public by the time you hear this, but I hadn't seen it when I was actually putting the episode together. The game company Ubisoft is ending online service for 10 of the company's titles. That includes Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, and Assassin's Creed Revelations, all three of which were very popular titles. This means that the online features for those and the seven other games that they announced are just not going to work anymore. Those services will no longer be active, and that includes stuff like online multiplayer, obviously, as well as Ubisoft Connect Rewards. Those are kind of like achievements on Xbox or trophies on PlayStation. Steam also has achievements like this. Fortunately, this is not a case where the online component means the games become totally unplayable, as far as I can tell. Gamers should still be able to run these games on, you know, the hardware that can run them, because these are older games, and still be able to play the single player experience. They just won't be able to access those online features. But this is one of the big reasons I personally do not like game companies tying their single player games to some sort of online service. Usually it's an online service that's meant to verify that the gamer is using a legitimate copy of the game and not a pirated copy. And that's because if a company decommissions the online component, then the game can become unplayable, even if you still have equipment that could technically run the game. So I hate when game companies tie their titles to some online service that doesn't really add to the game itself. It only exists to verify the copy of the game. Because if that service goes offline and they don't offer some sort of patch, then the game you purchased is just, it's just dead code. Anyway, kind of sad to see that support go away. It does make sense. Like, there is a limited amount of resources that a company has to put towards supporting games. And it doesn't really make sense to just continually support online components in perpetuity to a diminishing audience, right? That doesn't make good business sense. So I get it from that perspective. You might remember that a few weeks back, I talked about how NASA had retrieved a capsule from the OSIRIS-REx mission. That's the mission that visited an asteroid called Bennu. And the spacecraft ended up collecting soil and rock samples from Bennu and then swung by Earth, jettisoned this capsule, and the capsule landed here on Earth, and NASA retrieved it. That's good news. But there's also some bad news. The bad news is, so far, the scientists haven't been able to open the capsule. They have collected more than 70 grams worth of dust and rocks from the outside of the container, But because that dust and those rocks were on the outside of the container, that means that they've had contact with, and thus contamination from, our dirty, dirty earth dirt. So, you know, you can't really make specific scientific conclusions about stuff from outer space if it's already been contaminated here on Earth. You don't know what elements were just present in the space stuff versus what was transferred through that contact. So the real treasure is inside the capsule, where those samples have not been contaminated by Earth. So the goal is to preserve that status and retrieve the samples, then run tests. And that way you can at least be pretty sure that the conclusions you draw are firm, that they're well-grounded. Because, you know, if you were to, say, find organic material inside the dust or rocks, then you could say, well, we took all the controls necessary to prevent contamination from Earth. We found this stuff here that's really interesting, and it raises a lot more questions. You can't really do that if you're not able to maintain that integrity. Unfortunately, two of the fasteners on this capsule, there are more than 30 fasteners in total, but two of them are firmly shut and cannot be removed with the tools that NASA had previously approved for the retrieval operation. So that means that we have to wait while researchers work on the problem and figure out an alternative to accessing the material inside the capsule, one that will maintain that integrity. It doesn't mean that they won't come up with it. In fact, I'm sure they will come up with it, but it will delay things a little bit because they have to make sure that they're still keeping, you know, things as secure as they possibly can. So we do still expect to get into that capsule and to eventually be able to check out those space rocks. It's just going to take a little bit longer to come up with a way to do it that keeps them preserved properly. Now, that's it for the stories, but I do have one press release and one article to recommend for y'all for further reading today. So on the press release side, the U.S. Securities Exchange Commission stated that it has filed fraud charges against the company SolarWinds, as well as the company's chief information security officer. Now, you might remember that SolarWinds is the company that was behind the Orion software that thousands of large companies and government agencies use, and that hackers were able to compromise the Orion software, and through updates that were pushed out by SolarWinds itself, they were subsequently able to infect target computer systems, thousands of them. It was one of the largest known cybersecurity breaches of all time, and it raised awareness of a type of malware strategy called a supply chain attack. Anyway, the fraud charges are complicated, and I'm sure it'll necessitate like a full episode on the topic to give a full update. But for the time being, I recommend y'all read up on that press release. You can find it at sec.gov and look for the press release about SolarWinds. As for an article recommendation, Lindsay Clark of The Register has a piece titled "Tech Bros Still Cling to Sexist Stereotypes, Forgetting Female Pioneers Who Coded Their Path." Now, I cannot say that this story surprises me, which makes me sad. I wish I could say it surprised me and still made me sad, but I wasn't surprised, and that was really sad. It's a reminder that the tech industry in general, and really the whole tech bro culture in particular, is often an unwelcome or downright hostile environment for women, and really for anyone who doesn't identify as male. And it reminds us that we wouldn't be where we are today in the tech world without contributions of people who do not identify as male, of women, and of non-binary people who have made incredible contributions to tech. Some of the greatest innovators in tech who built the foundations of computer science were women. You know, Grace Hopper, and even further back, Ada Lovelace, for goodness sakes. People who were true visionaries when it comes to technology. And yet we still have this environment that denigrates women and dismisses their contributions and achievements. It's unfortunate and sadly, again, not surprising. But I do recommend reading that article. Again, that's in The Register. It's called Tech Bros Still Cling to Sexist Stereotypes. You can check that out. That's it for today. I wish you all a happy Halloween. I hope you are you encounter endless treats and very few tricks. And I hope you're also all doing well, and I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.